Freya feels suspended in a gorgeous bubble of opulence and luxury, but she is nagged by the voice at the back of her mind, insisting that she's about to be press-ganged into becoming some sort of drug mule or high-class prostitute. She doesn't want her little bubble to burst, but she can't very well stay seated at the table with half a glass of a 1985 Merlot in front of her, can she? She drains her glass, savours the exquisite oak with a hint of fruit flavour enveloping her tongue, and follows her hosts across the vast marble floor and up the lavish sweeping staircase. They pass room after room after room, billiard room, bathroom, exercise room, and an entire room filled with crockery. What kind of family has an entire room devoted to crockery? She asks herself. The house is the size of a boutique five-star hotel and twice as ostentatious. In spite of the knowledge that she needs to suppress her inquisitive nature, she cannot shake the fear that a meth lab resides somewhere within these walls. Your room will be here, just a few doors down from Elijah's. You will handle the majority of his care, but Rosalind, Harland, Marie, and myself will help with many of the basic tasks. Jack may also emerge from his cave to assist from time to time. I'll give you a roster, but understand we are paying you a premium rate and expect a premium service. You may be called upon at odd hours to perform tasks that are somewhat outside of your usual job description. Evelyn fixes her with a penetrating glare. Freya holds her gaze and starts planning how she's going to spend her first paycheck in order to distract from her mounting apprehension. Besides our bedrooms, most of the rooms in this house are yours to enter as you please, provided you stay within the boundaries outlined earlier, of course. We'll give you a magnetic key program to open only the rooms you are permitted to enter. Everything else will be inaccessible to avoid confusion, Evelyn says in a tour guide voice. Of course, Freya replies, as she bites her normally razor-sharp tongue, which has been aching to deliver 100 shades of sardonic scorn all evening. She knows that no comment, no matter how hilarious she may find it, is worth throwing away $2,000 a week and all the lobster she can eat. She makes a mental note to record the evening's events and reenact them in full for Callum at the earliest opportunity. Our work keeps both Evelyn and myself busy at unusual hours, so we won't be around often, but Maria, Rosalind, or Jack, if you can find him, will be able to assist if you need anything, Harland states as he stops outside an ornately carved door. He removes his magnetic key and swipes it against the lock. It opens with a quiet bleep, and the lights inside automatically flicker to life as she enters. The windows, in an extravagant European style, stretch nearly to the vaulted ceiling, which hosts one of the most striking chandeliers Freya has ever seen. The room contains a magnificent collection of antiques, a library that appears both expensive and expansive, and a small kitchenette with a collection of appliances that hum and blink and pulse with more streamlined gadgetry than the average fighter jet. The rear wall appears to be some sort of shrine, covered in a vast and incomprehensible collage of photos, certificates, trophies, ribbons, and medallions. Through an open door in the far right wall, she can glimpse an ensuite with a spa bath and marble-top vanity. As impressive as all of this is, and Freya estimates the value of the room's contents to equate to her projected lifetime income as a ward nurse, none of these adornments is the room's most striking feature. In the middle of the room, a sprawling web of cables snakes and crawls into one central point. They connect the monitors and machines and gadgets and gizmos to an immobile young man lit by the soft green aura of the plethora of mechanical devices encircling him. The forest of machines produces a quiet choir of beeps. Freya feels as though she has entered the church of some esoteric pagan deity. She opens her mouth to say something, but then thinks better of it. Beep, beep, beep. This is our son Elijah. We'll leave the two of you to get acquainted, Harland says, before the three of them exit the room and click the door shut on Freya and the young man. The beeping of the machines translates in her vision as a stream of tiny, slender white ribbons. She does not approach him straight away, but takes her time to inspect the library, the wall of accolades, and the toaster with weather display, oven with holographic timer, espresso machine with voice activation. It is only after she has carefully assimilated all of this that she ambles over to him. Freya glances over the monitors. She's seen similar equipment before, of course, but not of this caliber, not even at the best private facilities. These are either fresh off the factory line or custom-made. Either way, expensive beyond the telling. He's in sleek satin pajamas embroidered with the initials EV across the top left corner of his chest. His skin is a surprisingly healthy hue, and his cheeks are freshly shaven, but it is clear from the apparatus connected to him that he's been comatose for some time. He's handsome, strikingly so. He's the kind of strong, well-proportioned face that would look right at home on a Greek statue. Freya notes the extensive scarring on his right arm and draws her finger lightly across the scar tissue. The obvious questions detonate like a cluster bomb in her brain. What happened to him? How long has he been like this? Who was he? What am I doing here? But for the moment, she suppresses them, to let them exist as hungry ghosts at the outskirts of her psyche. She reaches out and places her hand against his cheek. She feels strangely comforted by the warmth that greets her palm. Hi, Elijah, she whispers. I guess you and me are going to be friends.